silver bird in her hands, trembling with fatigue, as the walls trembled around her. This was her father's house, and it did not take joy in those who would work against him.
"It is done,"
she told Haida, who was hovering nearby.
"Can you tell if it is for good or ill? I have burnt out my magic in its making." "Leave the silver bird,"
said Haida.
"It will distract him, and much good may it do him. I am not such as you to read an artifact. You have done what you could. Come, let us leave this place before it collapses a purpose. Underhill is no longer stable. It is angry with us." "Underhill is angry with the she and not your kind,"
corrected Ariana tiredly, though she staggered to her feet.
"Though my father's home is not best pleased with the two of us, that is also true."
Underhill had been necessary for her work. Magic did not lend itself to complicated things in the outside, the land that now belonged to the short-lived, magic-blind folk.
"Underhill does not concern itself with she or not,"
grumbled Haida, steadying Ariana when she would have fallen.
"Only Fae and not Fae, and the Fae are failing it, allowing the humans to bind what was not meant to be bound."
The hobgoblin was a great deal stronger than she looked, which was useful under the circumstances. But she was tired too, so their travel was slow. If they could get out of her father's lands before he returned with his hounds, they might have a chance at eluding him for a short while. But Ariana knew there would be no real escape. Artifact or no, it was her destruction that her father craved. So when the ground warned her, the trees whispering his name as flowers trembled, and then his horn sounded, summoning his hounds, she was not overcome with dismay. She would have had to have some hope to feel dismayed.
"We are finished,"
she told Haida, feeling fear rise like bile even without the magic of his hounds touching her. That he called to them meant that he must have found a way to win them back.
"You need to flee."
The hobgoblin snarled at her.
"Do not make me make it an order,"
Ariana said. But it was already too late. For either of them.
"Ariana," purred her father's voice.
She turned around and faced him. He wore his wild aspect, stag horns reaching upward and tangling in the lower branches of the tree he stood under. A shiver slid through her, a feeling of inevitability, as if this moment had been fated since her birth. That other part of her, the one she'd warned Haida to be careful of, stirred restlessly, ready to shield her from her father. The thought of the hobgoblin reminded her that Ariana was not the only one her father had reason to be angry at.
"Father,"
she stepped squarely in front of her little faithful friend. He looked around the woods, at Haida, at the grass at Ariana's feet, at everywhere other than Ariana herself, and smiled gently.
"Do you think to flee me with the artifact still undone?"
"No, father,"
she said staunchly. He would kill her. When he knew it all, he would kill her.
"It is finished."
He held the little silver bird out to her. She hadn't realized he'd been holding it.
"This?"
He tossed it on the ground, and in a voice that carried the low rumble of distant thunder, he said,
"This is garbage. You have broken your promise, your sworn word. To do so is death for the Fae."
She raised her chin as triumph rushed through her. Whatever she and her beast had managed, it had thwarted her father's will. She might die, but he could not use her to destroy the world.
"It does what I promised you it would. What the thing you turned me into by the tender care of your hounds promised you that the artifact would do. It eats the magic of any Fae the wielder desires and allows it to be consumed again. Finished and sealed, so it cannot again be altered."
She could not lie, and did not need to. The first part had been done when she and Haida had sought to deflect the artifact's purpose. The last she knew as well. However else the artifact functioned, she had not broken the word given by the beast. He narrowed his eyes at her and snarled. The glimpse of the fangs in his mouth tightened her stomach and left her lightheaded.
"You knew what I wanted," he said.
"Yes,"
she agreed, finding that the lightheadedness had brought with it a sort of sereneness. Or maybe that had come from the earlier feeling that this meeting had been fated for them. He would kill her. Hopefully it would not hurt too much, but there was nothing she could do to prevent it.
"You knew that I did not want to build what you wanted. The strictures you gave me were loose enough that I could slide around them."
Her father was powerful but not clever, not like her mother had been, or Haida.
"You will make me another artifact then," he said, "or fix this one."
She shook her head.
"The bird is finished. It is an artifact sealed and immutable. And I?"
She smiled at him.
"Artifacts demand a price. I do not have enough magic left in me."
Artificers were rare, even among the most powerful of the Fae. He would not find another he could bend to his will before the terms of his agreement with one more powerful than he would come due. She closed her eyes and raised her face to the sun. She didn't expect to live long enough to see another day. Her only satisfaction was that he had not won. Her magic would not destroy the Fae, and her father would not outlive her by long. Her father picked the bird up off the ground and rolled it around in his hand, and she saw that his right arm ended in a rough and bloody lump of bandaging.
"Father,"
she said before she considered the wisdom of it,
"what did you do to your hand?"
6. Samuel. My father ran his fingers through Ada's unhealthy brown coat and growled.
"I thought she said she demanded the Forest Lord's hand to power the spell."
The witch had called Ada as soon as the Forest Lord, one arm wrapped in bandages, had left. She kept him until late in the afternoon, then dumped him outside when she was finished with him. As soon as he fell, my father and I had changed back to human. Ada needed help no wolf could render. I brought the bowl of water to the weakened wolf and fed the water to him, one handful at a time. I made no answer to my dad's accusation. His anger wasn't directed at me, and there was no way to answer the anguish in his eyes. Words didn't come to me as they once had, anyway. Instead, I crooned to the suffering beast as he swallowed. Da patted my shoulder in mute apology for his sharpness, and I nodded in acknowledgement. She'd mutilated Ada again. His front left paw had not regrown from the last time. Moreover, it was festering despite all I could do. I'd noticed that the wounds she made to feed her magic were more likely to rot than other, naturally acquired wounds, more difficult even for werewolves to heal. To work the spell for the Fae, tonight she'd taken Ada's right front paw, too. He could not walk in wolf form, and he had not the strength to try to take on a human form, even if he knew how, which I was not certain of. The wolf in my father's arms whined at him, and Da bent his head.
"It will be well," he murmured.
He looked at the cottage, and the corners of his mouth whitened. My mother's voice whispered in my ears.
"Look now to your Da. If you've never seen rage on his face, you have now. Those old fools won't know what hit them."
I couldn't remember what long-ago conflict she'd been talking about, but I knew that she'd been right. Then, but this was a fight he could not win, and we all knew it. I began changing back to wolf. There was nothing more to do for Ada that my Da wouldn't do, and I would be more used to him in my wolf form than as a weak human. Daffod made a soft sound, as gentle as I'd ever heard out of his mouth. The rest of the wolves hovered uncertainly.
"And a fat lot of help you've been," snarled my father at Daffod. "Here's your son, and you watch as she kills him."
Though Daffod had always been quick to punish any sign of disrespect before, this time he didn't take any action at all. I couldn't read his emotions, Of all the wolves, Daffod was the most difficult to read. It was as though the only thing he ever felt was anger or fear of the witch. Nothing else. Otto woofed, catching Da's attention.
"Aye," my father said. "I'm through watching."
He kissed Ada on the forehead, then broke the wolf's neck with a quick jerk of his hands. It was so fast. One moment Ada had been panting in pain, and the next, he was gone. That was when Daffod finally growled, and the heat of his anger swept through the air. Da stood up, let the dead wolf roll off his lap and onto the ground. He started the change that would turn him back to wolf. Daffod and my Da had disagreed before, even fought a time or two, and Da had always backed down before matters grew serious. But in my Da's eyes, I could tell that he'd reached his breaking point. He was done. I stepped between them, so Daffod could not attack Da until Da was fully wolf. I didn't think it would happen. Daffod was usually fair, but I stepped in anyway, just in case I was wrong. A horn blew in the distance, a clear, soft note that wrapped itself around my throat and tugged. The Forest Lord's call was more than any of us could resist, and I found myself running beside Daffod, shoulder to shoulder. Da finished his change while we ran. We would answer the Fae's call and do his bidding if he could control us, and kill him if he couldn't, and I didn't much care which. When we were finished, there would be a reckoning either for my father's defiance or for Daffod's complicity. The battle had only been delayed, not halted. Daffod was huge and violent, only a little smaller than I was. My Da was a little less than 3/4 of Daffod's weight, but he was canny, my Da. I did not know who would win. I'd expected a short run to the Fae, but it turned out to be a fair distance, and I revised my estimates of his power. The chances of avoiding doing whatever he asked of us went down with each mile. It didn't bother me much. What could he ask that we had not already done for my grandmother? Any pretense of goodness that I ever claimed was spent long ago. The only thing that mattered to me was Da. We topped a rise, and there was a small clearing laid out before our eyes. The Fae Lord was there, the bandage on his right arm red with his blood. He was less human-seeming out here in the woods. Antlers rose from his head and spread the width of his shoulders and more. And he was huge. He blew on his horn again, and it called songs from our throats. We half-slid, half-ran down the backside of the rise and leaped over the creek on the bottom. Once across the water, Daffod slowed to a cautious dog trot, and the rest of us followed his lead into the meadow where the Forest Lord waited. 7. Haida.
"My hand," the Forest Lord said, raising the stump of his arm. "This is the price I paid for what you have done to me."
He threw the artifact Haida's lady had made at a tree. It hit and tore bark from the trunk, leaving a weeping wound. The little silver bird dropped to the ground, out of sight. He waited, but her lady was not such a fool as to say anything with her father in a towering rage. Not that her silence was likely to buy her safety in the long run. Haida understood that the lady had known that, really, since she made the decision to make sure that her little bird would never serve his purposes. Haida said, her voice stinging with contempt, trying to draw his attention away from her lady.
"You went to the crone by the White Spring. To a witch? A human?"
The Forest Lord hissed, his deer-like ears flattening with ire. He flung a hand out toward Haida, and the little hobgoblin stiffened her spine and prepared to accept the poison she'd spun. But her lady stepped to the side and took the blow of magic herself. Haida wailed and started forward as the pain dropped her lady to her knees. The hobgoblin touched her lady's shoulder, trying to dilute the effect of the Forest Lord's anger.
"Go,"
said her lady with power in her voice.
"Leave me. Hide."
And such was the strength of the lady, even diminished as she was, that Haida could only follow her orders. The Forest Lord, rage forcing a bellow like one of the great deer in rut out of his throat, threw another bolt of pain into his daughter, Hating herself for her inability to defend Ariana, Haida found a place under some bushes, where she could at least bear witness and give what aid she could. The Lord took the horn he wore on a thong around his chest and blew again, summoning his hounds. The sound did what the pain had not. When Ariana raised her head, it was the beast who looked out of her eyes. The beast's lips curled back from white teeth, and it started to get to its feet. Haida felt a breathless instant of hope. The beast was more powerful in its way than her lady was. Haida could feel the power of the beast's magic, full and strong, proof, if she'd needed it, that the beast and her lady were truly different from each other. Had the beast had more time, even a moment, it might have destroyed the forest lord. But the howls that answered the great horn caused the beast to freeze, and fear robbed it of its power. The beast rolled into a ball on the ground and waited for what would come. The animals responding to the forest lord didn't sound like his hounds. Evidently the Fey Lord felt the same, for he paused, taking his attention off his daughter for a moment. If only her lady hadn't sent her away. Haida might have managed to make use of the momentary lapse, but she was too far away to do anything but watch. 8. Samuel. There was a moment when we were free of thrall, after the forest lord blew his horn the second time, after we topped the rise, so he could plainly see that what had come to his call was not his hounds. While he stood in shock, we were free. I had not realized until then that the witch had given up her hold upon us when he summoned us with his horn. I was of free will for the first time since she'd knocked upon my door and turned my father and me into monsters. We stopped, looking down upon them. Daffid whined, and the others shuffled around, but my father and I stood frozen. The forest lord's face twisted with anger, and he looked at us and closed his single fist. I felt his determination, his magic roll over me. I snarled in protest, but we were his. The forest lord turned his attention to the girl curled up on the ground in front of him.
"You are of no further use to me."
Next to his bulk, she looked frail and helpless. I could not see her face, only a long fall of pale silver hair touched with lavender that could not have belonged to a human. He looked at us then, smiled savagely, and said,
"Direwolves. I had heard the witch had such to serve her. You are not my hounds, but you will suffice for this. Hurt this woman for me. She is meant to die today, but I want her to suffer first."
Slave to his purpose, the pack ran to do his bidding, all except my father and I. Tantalized by that breath of freedom, I fought him. Fought the magic that tried to hold me. And I failed. All I could do was slow my obedience so that the rest of them were already attacking the defenseless Fey woman by the time I reached her, conscious that my father's pace was just a little slower than mine. I closed my fangs on the Fey woman's shoulder, biting deep, teeth scraping against bone. I had meant to crush her throat, and so to rebel against the Fey Lord's command and save her from her suffering as my Da had saved Ada. But the Fey Lord's magic was too strong for me. Daffid snarled at me and snapped his teeth in my direction. Maybe I was in his way. Maybe he had seen what I'd tried to do. Daffid believed in obedience. I released my grip and snarled back at him. Which was why I saw Da attack the Forest Lord. Such a Fey in his other form is a huge thing, heavier and taller than the biggest horse I'd ever seen. My father ran up the Fey Lord's side, digging in with claws like a cat climbing a tree. His fangs sank deep into the Fey Lord's neck, and the leash controlling us was no more. I leaped away from the dying Fey woman and dove to my father's aid. Daffid hesitated. His prey was bleeding and helpless, but there was no longer anything forcing him to continue to hurt the woman. For a moment, it was only Da and I. The forest lord broke my father's grip and tossed him to the ground. I leaped and got lucky, biting deep into the tendon behind his knee. The Fae roared, and the forest answered. Magic, wild and painful, seared over my back like a swarm of angry bees. But Da harried him from the other side, and the magic scattered as the forest lord lost concentration. He drew a bronze knife from his belt and swiped it at Da, who flowed away like water. Then he brought the blade back so quickly I could tell it was an intentional strike, and I was the target he'd intended in the first place. I could have dropped my hold, but I was close to crippling him. I wasn't afraid of death, had been waiting for it since my wife and children had died. To die as Adahad would be a release. I hung on grimly, feeling the tendon start to tear, but it would not give way before his knife found me. Before it could connect, Daffid's jaws closed on the Fae Lord's wrist and dragged the knife off course. The Forest Lord staggered, pulled off balance by Daffid's unexpected weight, and further off balance by the leg I'd damaged. With a high-pitched scream that hurt my ears, he dropped the knife and grabbed Daffid, and impaled him upon his sharp, pale ivory horns. One tine pierced David's throat and came out his eye. As I saw him die, I felt it too, like a tear in my chest that opened me to the pain he'd felt as he died. For a moment, my eyes quit working, blinded by David's trauma. When I could see again, Pater was dead, his head pulled off his body, and my own body convulsed as I felt that too. Ada had been my packmate, but it had been his dying that had dwelt in us all, not his death, which had been a release. Daffid's death, Pater's death, was no release. They had been vital and healthy, then dead, and their deaths rippled through bonds I had not realized were there until they hurt so. This morning there had been seven of us, and now we were four, and our pack had no leader. That last bothered my wolf, and if he had been in charge of our body, as he was during most battles I had engaged in since I was changed, he would have disengaged and run. But neither witch, nor forest lord, nor wolf held my leash. I would not abandon my Da to this creature. My fangs severed the tendon, and I dropped to the ground, unable to keep hold where the Fae's flesh had given way. The forest lord's leg collapsed, toppling him like a woodsman toppled an oak. Unlike an oak, he did not lie still when he landed. He rolled, grabbed his knife, and stuck it into a wolf too distracted by the other wolves' deaths to get out of the way of the clumsy strike. Aeon's belly ripped upwards, spilling intestines and soft organs on the ground. Though the initial strike had been luck, the Fae Lord adjusted his grip and pulled the knife in a twisted path that ended in a thrust into the wolf's spinal column. So fast, Aeon was dead too. This time, my packmate's death didn't slow me down. It didn't hurt any less, but the shock of it was gone. I knew what it felt like now when one of our pack died. From first impact to death was less than a breath's time. Aeon was older than I, and only a moment ago he was alive and unhurt. There had been times that I would have killed him myself if it had not been for the witch's hold upon me. I would not have thought I would mourn his death. The Fae Lord was quick. So quick, even half-crippled and one-handed, he dealt out painful wounds, and the three of us who were left, Da, Daniel, and I, learned to be swift and wary, to hit and move. If my first attack had not been from behind him, I'd already have joined Daffid and the others in death. But the Fae Lord was too wary to let any of us behind him so easily again. I suppose the time lasted no more than a few minutes, but it seemed like a long time that we fought, with none of us gaining advantage. Then he stuck the knife deep in my Da's hip. It caught there, and he had to jerk to get it out. Daniel dove to help Da, and I jumped and caught onto his mutilated right arm and ripped and tore with ferocity born of fear. He swung his arm, and I flew loose, my head hitting a tree like a smith hit an anvil. When I staggered to my feet, the forest lord was dead. My father had torn out his throat. Daniel was dying, impaled as Daffid had been on the forest lord's tines. The light dimmed in his eyes, and they fogged over with death's touch. His presence fell from my senses. My father howled in grief, and I echoed the sound. I had not liked them, any of them, but they had been my pack, my family in spirit. Daffid had led the others to our aid and given his life to save mine. I mourned them properly. The Fey Lord's body moved, and I turned with a snarl to face another attack. He was still dead, but as ice melts into water, his body melted into the soil, leaving clothing and accoutrement behind. In only a few moments, the only bodies left to rot on the forest floor belonged to my pack. Dad tried to stand up, but the Fey Lord's knife was still embedded in his hip. I nudged him ungently, telling him to quit moving. Then I began my change to human. It should have been harder as I had changed earlier that day, but it wasn't. The pain was still there, but not so much of it, and the actual change felt natural. Good. In human skin again, I knelt beside my father. It had taken too long to change, and he'd already begun healing around the knife blade. Just the flesh so far, and not the bone, which would have been more complicated and more painful to fix. "Quick, then," I told him, and held him down with one hand and jerked the blade free with the other. He panted with the pain but made no other sound. He would heal now, and he wouldn't thank me for hovering. He didn't like being watched while he was in pain. None of my medical knowledge had ever done the werewolves much good. They either lived or they died. My experience told me that my father would live. Probably. A crow had landed on Daffid, and I drove it off. In response to my growl, the Fey woman made a faint, pained noise. I'd forgotten about her. I knew nothing of her but the taste of her blood in my mouth. I had not seen her face or heard her voice. She was nothing to me. Nothing but my victim. I did not know how long my freedom from the witch would last. Maybe if Da and I ran fast enough, we'd escape her entirely. I didn't believe that, but it was a faint possibility. But Da had to heal, and maybe in the meantime, I could be of use to someone. There was a fey creature of a kind I'd never seen beside the woman's body. She was maybe half the size of a human woman, no taller than my waist. Where her dress, which was silvery blue of a fine weave, did not cover, her body was covered with a coarse, green and gray hair that thickened on the top of her head. She should have looked grotesque, but there was a rightness, a naturalness to her form that made her oddly beautiful. She smelled female, with a strong hint of power and growing things. Her face was human enough for me to find expression on it, but it reminded me more of a fox's than a woman's, an impression not dispelled by triangular ears, now half-flattened along her skull. Her eyes were overly large, and she squinted like a being more used to the shadows than light, wrinkling her nose and panting half in fear and half in desperation as I approached. She hissed and bared sharp, weasel-like teeth and put herself between the wounded woman and me. "I mean no harm, little one," I told her. "I have some training. Let me help."
"You would help my lady? You who hurt her?"
The words were clear, if oddly accented. "Before I was a monster, I was a healer," I told her. "This hurt I and my..." My what? Fellow monsters? It had been a long, long time since I'd talked to anyone but my dad. It felt odd to put my thoughts into words, especially as I was distracted. "My pack. We were under duress and would not have hurt her otherwise." A lie. I did not lie. Once, it had been a matter of pride to me, so I amended my statement to make it truth. "I would not have hurt her otherwise." She looked at me, glanced over at my da whose hip was scabbed over. I noticed that he was changing to human himself, and I stepped a little sideways between her and da. He was less able to protect himself effectively when changing. She settled a little, as if my action had reassured her, and stepped aside. I stripped the Fey woman's body free of the rags of clothing our attack had left her. Her skin was darker than anything I'd seen on a human, a warm shade like a doe's summer coat, but the ridged scars that crossed and recrossed themselves like a macabre braid were white. Some looked as though they were put on her body with a whip, but more were the result of wounds very similar to the freshly open ones we'd given her. In addition to the wounds from this day, there were a number of healing wounds, bite wounds, doubtless from the hounds that the forest lord had lost control of.
"Will she live?"
The little creature crouched beside me and reached out to pet the wounded woman's arm. "I don't know, Fay," I told her. "But she's lived through worse."
"She should be healing faster than this,"
the little creature said.
"She always has before."
I thought of Ada and his festering wounds and said nothing. The forest lord's body had gone to earth, but his clothing remained. I went to where he had died and appropriated his fine cloak, a bronze eating knife, and a flask filled with bracata, wort fermented with honey. I had found such alcohol good for cleaning wounds. Returning to the woman, I cut the cloak into strips and used them to bind up the worst of the wounds. "These should properly be stitched," I told the little creature. "But I don't have needles or thread. Without that, they will leave scars behind. Like the other wounds have." I frowned at a nasty mass of scars on her ribs. "Why did he do this?" I asked. She bowed her head.
"She is two-natured like you and her father, though not two-formed. This aspect, her she aspect, is impervious to her father's commands. But her other self is closer to the natural world and must obey him. It rises to protect her from danger or harm. Her father needed her obedience to build a thing, a powerful and bad thing. She would not do it, so he tortured her with fear and pain until the other part of her rose."
"He was her father?" I asked. She nodded. The Fey woman looked fragile and broken on the forest floor. But to resist such treatment, to have risen again over and over, such a one was tougher than she looked. "I can't do much," I told the Fey creature. "I don't have the supplies. I can clean the wounds and stop the bleeding and give her the chance to heal. She needs to be somewhere out of the weather. There is snow coming."
"There is shelter,"
she bobbed her head.
"And we have needles and thread. What else do you need?"
"Honey," I told her. "Willow bark, water. How far away is the shelter?"
"Shelter is not far," she said. 20 minutes walk. If you can bring her, I can take you. And also there might other items you mentioned be found. An Underhill wills it to be so."
She sounded doubtful.
"What is not there, I can steal."
Promise of a shelter and supplies changed my to-do list. I finished stanching the bleeding. If the little creature could run, we could turn her 20 minutes to half that.
"Samuel."
My da sounded tired. I looked at him, and his face was drawn and gray. The mark on his hip was still an angry red.
"I'll find you after I dispose of the bodies."
I nodded and wrapped the remnants of the forest lord's cloak around myself, using the fabric to secure the flask of bracata and the knife in sheath. I picked up the woman. She was light in my arms, lighter than my wife had been, though she was taller. I could remember the feel of my wife's weight in my arms, but I could not see her face. I staggered a step as my mind went blank in panic because I couldn't remember. Couldn't remember her face or her name. Just glimpses of a lifetime. My breath caught in my throat with the terrible grief of loss. It mattered a lot less while my grandmother had me on her leash. I'd lost more than my humanity while in my grandmother's hands. I'd lost my wife and my children, and I had not recognized how terrible the loss was. I could not remember them. Not their faces or their names.
You are hurt?
Asked the little fey creature tentatively. Yes, I said, because I would not lie. But not in the way that you mean. My father said a name that slid off my ears. He waited a moment, then said, Samuel. I must have looked a little wild-eyed when I turned to him.
She stole my memories. Stole my name.
He nodded once.
There will be a reckoning. Do you remember them? My wife and children?
I asked. When he nodded again, my panic eased.
As long as someone does, they aren't lost.
They are not lost as long as I live, my father agreed.
I'll remember them for you. Go ahead, Samuel. I'll come by and by.
I nodded. I turned to the little fey creature.
I can run with her. Lead me as quickly as you can and I will follow.
The fey creature ran. She stumbled a little here and there, and I had the impression that she was very, very tired. But she was quick, so it didn't take us long before we came upon a small hut that was less inviting than my grandmother's, and looked as though no one had lived in it for years. She reached over her head and pulled a chain to release the latch. When she opened the door, I knew it for a fey residence because it was larger on the inside than on the outside. As soon as I stepped into it, I felt an odd, hostile personality brush up against me. Letting my lips curl in a snarl, I pulled my patient closer to me in a futile effort to protect her from something I could not detect with any of my usual senses. The odd entity paused, then slid over my wolf in an exuberant and laughing run, and I smelled, for a very brief moment, the rich scent of summer flowers. The little fay hesitated, then murmured,
The father is dead, so the lady is mistress here. I think we shall find what we need to tend her wounds. Follow me.
She took me to a large room and bade me lay the woman on a tick of straw that rested on ropes suspended on a carved wooden frame. She lit the fire in the room with a look and a word in a language I did not understand, then left as I cut the bindings I'd put on the first and largest wound. I cleaned the wound with the alcohol. By the time I was through, the little creature had returned with a bronze needle, fine thread, a jar of honey, several jars of salve, and a pitcher.
The thread is too fine, I told her. It will tear her skin. I need something more like thread to stitch leather.
She nodded and trotted away. The pitcher was warm when I picked it up, and the brown liquid inside tasted strongly of willow bark. I set it aside and tested the salves, all but one of which I could identify the contents of. That one I set aside with the pitcher. The fey woman's little friend returned with appropriate thread and a bucket of water, and I began the tedious task of cleaning, stitching, and bandaging. The woman didn't stir beyond a flutter of her eyelashes when I stitched up a particularly nasty tear over her hip. The worst hurt was a gash in her thigh that was too old to stitch. It would likely cause her trouble long after it healed. I covered it with a salve of fat, honey, yarrow, and comfrey that the little fay, who had shyly introduced herself as Haida, had brought back when I asked if she had such a thing.
"It was lurking on the shelves in her kitchen," she said,
as if I'd asked for an explanation for why her kitchen could supply exactly the salve I'd asked for.
This is my lady's home now, and it approves of you.
She gave me a sharp look and a warning jerk of her chin.
For now.
Someone knocked briskly at the door, but before I could do much more than stand up from where I'd been kneeling beside the bed, the door opened, and my da came striding into the room where I was working. He looked at the woman, then at me.
"Is she worth the death we have laid before her?" he asked me soberly.
"I do not know those of yours that died today. As for the Forest Lord, he well earned the ending of his life and no blame to my lady for it,"
Haida said.
"But my lady is worthy of much. You have seen her scars."
"She's been treated badly," I told Da.
Torture over months, perhaps years. Ida bobbed her head.
Yes. Torture to force her to build that which should never be made. She fought with what weapons were hers.
Then she told us the Forest Lord's intent and the outcome her lady had seen for that artifact. So for years she had fought to deceive him, suffering horribly for her defiance. My dad bowed.
A worthy lady, he said wearily. My da, if he were the man he was once, would have given his life happily to protect such a one. He died fighting for me, not knowing that we fought to save a woman of worth. But I do.
Dafydd,
I said.
Your granda,
da grimaced. Once he was a power to challenge the witch, and also a good man. Ida was the youngest of us all, and his particular favorite. If he could not be moved to help him, then whatever humanity lurked inside the monster was too faint to attend to. Dafydd would have died today at my hands instead. He died saving his grandson's life. It is a better outcome. I nodded, cleaning my hands a final time. If I pick her up, Da, can you strip the soiled blankets and help Hyda spread new ones? In no time we had the Fey woman tucked back in clean, dry bedding, bandaged and treated to the best of my abilities. Being covered with dirt had not particularly bothered me when we'd changed to human in the forest. But here in the clean room, it felt wrong. When I requested clean water to bathe in, Hyda directed us to bedrooms no less grand than the one in which the wounded Fey lady rested. Though I had seen no signs of servants here, there were great copper tubs of hot water, and clean clothes waiting for us. I ducked ahead into both rooms before we separated. I scraped away my beard with a knife so sharp that it did not nick my skin, though it had been a very long time since I had shaved. I washed my face again in an astringent that hadn't been on the table beside the bath when I started shaving. Clean and dried, I put on the plain-made clothes left on the foot of the bed. The stitching might have been simple, but the fabric was rich and fine. If it felt odd to wear clothes again, it felt odder still to wear boots after so long barefoot. But when Hyda called us to the kitchen to eat, I did not think again about either boots or clothing. The food was plentiful and hot, and tasted fit for gods. I almost felt human again. For 3 days, Da and I took turns watching over the Fey woman, Hyda's lady, who did not wake, though several times she stirred. We poured cups of willow bark tea and clear meat broth down her as often as we could. The second day, fever made her restless, and me worried. On that day, just after midday meal, I felt the witch's collar tighten around my throat. My Da growled and surged to his feet while I dropped to my knees. Hyda grunted, and the witch's call faded.
It is a strange kind of magic, she said. Powerful, and my power is limited. I will try to break it.
9. Ariana. She awoke in her own bed when she didn't expect to awake at all. She blinked and tried to get up, and her body revolted. She felt the beast stir within her. She subsided hastily, breathing through her nose as she tried to remember what happened. Her father, his missing hand, and then the beasts who came to his call. Not his hounds, with their overwhelming aura of terror, but these wolves who needed no magic to invite fear. She remembered teeth and snarls and nothing. She was weak and vulnerable, empty of magic. Unfamiliar feet scuffed on the floor of the hall outside her door. She forced herself to sit up, expecting something more threatening than the young human who bore a tray of soup in his hands.
Ah, he said. You're awake.
Hyda said she thought you'd be stirring soon.
Who are you?
She asked, as he set the tray on top of the leather-bound wooden chest. He was very tall. He had all of his teeth, and he moved well, balanced and more graceful than the human she'd seen. He wasn't handsome, but she couldn't take her eyes from him. The beast inside her tried to tell her he was a threat, but the man's movements were slow and careful. He dragged the chest over to the bed with a suspicious lack of effort. Humans, in her experience, were weak and fragile things, prone to dying and breeding with about the same frequency. This one was stronger than he looked. The chest was heavy, and she could not have moved it on her own without magic. The beast warned her again that he was dangerous.
"I asked you a question, human," she said, fear making her cold.
He looked up, and his eyes, some shade between noon sky and moonlit waterfall, met hers. The expression in them held her prisoner.
"I see your fear," they told her, "but no harm will come to you by me."
"I heard you," he said deliberately. "I was just considering the answer."
"It was not a difficult question," she said sharply.
He smiled, and the expression showed her that there was such sorrow inside him it made her heart ache.
"Not for most," he agreed. "My grandmother calls me Soil. Will that do?"
For a moment a flash of insight caught her, and she grabbed his hand where it rested on the handle of the tray while the beast tried to take her mouth and spill the true names that she had for him. Soil. Samuel Deathbringer. Samuel White Wolf.
"Samuel Healer,"
she said, then managed to close her lips before more escaped. He tilted his head, tossed an errant strand of long, light brown hair out of his eye, and said,
"Sometimes, I do warn you that calling me human is a little optimistic. I have not been simply human for a long time."
"Wolf,"
she said, her throat closing as the name was born on her tongue.
"Killer."
She pulled her hand away from him as if his flesh were hot iron. The beast was riled, and the flash of the memory of fangs closing upon her left her too afraid to control it properly.
"Sometimes," he agreed again mildly, as if unaware of his danger. Maybe he didn't know. "But it was your father who tried to have us kill you. Happily his control slipped, or my grandmother the witch did not give him enough control of us because he fair annoyed her. She does things like that, so we killed him instead of you."
She held still, all of her. The beast was silenced. The wolf sitting beside her was as nothing compared to what he told her. She felt as if time stopped, as if nothing moved inside her at all, not even her heart.
"My father is dead?"
Samuel, who evidently was sometimes a wolf, though she'd never heard of such a thing as a human who could turn into a wolf, said,
"Yes. It wasn't an easy thing, not even for us. He killed the rest of the pack, all but my da and me. But your father is dead, and returned to the forest."
Her heart started beating again, but it hurt, and she clasped her fist to her chest in an effort to stop it. Grief, rage, and relief fought for ascendance. Once, she had loved him. Her father, whose death changed so much. Samuel sat on the edge of her bed and held up a carved wooden bowl that steamed and smelled of good things.
"Drink this."
Her beast rose at his nearness, teetering on the brink of taking control. But when he simply did not move, she was able to breathe, and the thing her father had made of her subsided reluctantly. When she started to reach for the bowl, her hands shook, so she put them back down. His mouth flattened and the corner of his eyes tightened.
"I did that," he said, as if the words pained him.
"What?"
"To your shoulder," he said. "It went bad, and the fever kept you sick for a while. Haida tells me that usually you heal faster, but that you had used all your magic to thwart the Forest Lord's will. In any case, the shoulder will bother you for a while longer.
I don't know how long. My patients were regular folk, not Fae.
Haida seems to think that you've been weakened by your magic working and might heal as slowly as a human. In that case, it will hurt for a few more days."
She blinked at him a moment. Her shoulder hurt, it was true. But compared to what she usually felt after her father had finished with her, it was nothing. She might have said something, but he lifted the bowl to her lips. She contemplated another true name she had not let escape. Samuel Silverheart. She was named for the metal. Ariana and silver were not always the same, but she feared that the name meant what it sounded like. She could not love a wolf.
"I am Ariana,"
she told him when the bowl was empty. He bowed his head. "I wish that our first meeting had been different, lady. But upon this, our second meeting, I say that I am happy to make your acquaintance." Samuel's eyes held shadows that never left, though they lightened now and then, especially when he sang. Ariana was not a hobgoblin like Haida, to read emotions more easily than words. But despite the darkness born of sorrow and anger, he was gentle and patient with her sudden starts. When she fretted over staying in bed, he didn't argue as Haida did. While the hobgoblin scolded, he left the room. Ariana had swung her legs off her bed when he brought in a skin drum. He frowned at her bare feet. She found herself tucking them up beneath her instead of getting up as she'd intended, because her bare toes seemed more vulnerable than she liked in front of this man who was nearly a stranger. He sat on the side of her bed, and she scooted farther back, away from him and against the wall. "Well then," he said, not looking at her. "I saw this sitting around in the kitchen for no reason, and though it's been a while, I couldn't resist." She didn't recognize the drum, which meant that Underhill had brought it for him, like a puppy seeking to please. It didn't reassure her completely. Underhill had served her father long, but it helped to make her more comfortable. He struck up a soft, solemn rhythm and sang. She'd heard sweeter voices. The Fae have singers among them. But music loved his voice just the same. His song was about a wren singing in a field and a man who longed for his childhood home. When he was finished, he raised one eyebrow, set a quicker beat, and hopped directly into a song about a clever mouse and not-so-clever woman. There were better singers among the Fae, but he would have done well, even so, she thought, in the courts where her mother had lived. At his orders, she stayed in bed for a few more days. When she grew restless, Haida brought her weaving to her. It was not her favorite task, but making cloth was a necessity even for the Fae. Samuel came in while she was threading the warp, and he made her teach him. At first he made a mess of it, but his fingers were long and clever, and it wasn't long before he caught on. She thought it was another thing to keep her in bed. But when he later made Haida teach him to cook his favorite soups and sweets, she decided it was just curiosity. If it hadn't been for his kindness to her little champion, she might have resisted him longer, no matter the serious attention he'd given to her women's work. He was human and wolf, warned her beast, though it wasn't loud around Samuel. Ariana wasn't used to small kindnesses being dealt out by men, and she felt herself falling under the spell of the soft-spoken Samuel, just as Haida was. The hobgoblin had initially resisted his intrusion into her kitchen, but then he proposed a trade. He taught her a song for every dish she taught him to make, finding pretty but simple tunes with limited range, so Haida could sing them well. Her little friend's pleasure in making her own music made him happier than learning to cook did. He let Ariana get out of bed after 3 days. And then, contrary man, he became relentless in his demands for her to move, to bend and twist. An old wound in her leg bothered him the most. He told her to keep salve on it to soften the scar, made her move and bend until it hurt, then bend a little more. It took her a week before she admitted that she'd named him true. Silverheart. Ariana's heart. Her body loved his form, but her heart loved the man within who had so much kindness inside him. 10. Samuel. Haida was shy and nervous about my bumbling around in her kitchen, but I needed something to keep my hands and mind busy. Ariana was healing much faster than I expected, and after the first few days, her care was not enough to keep me busy.
I needed to do things to keep my mind off Da. Ida had broken the hold my grandmother had on me, but the tie that bound my father to the witch was stronger than mine, either because he'd taken Daffid's place as head of the pack, since he was closer in blood to her, or, and he said this was probable, because she'd had her claws into him longer. The witch would be enraged with the deaths of the rest of the pack, and whatever Haida had done to free me, and my father was facing her alone. When I was certain that Ariana would heal without me, I would return to do for my father what Haida had done for me. I would free him from the witch. I could all but taste her blood on my tongue, and it was a fine taste, one to look forward to. In the meantime, I found things to keep me busy. If she had not loved music so much, Haida would never have let me into her kitchen. My wife had never let me help her cook. As I worked grinding leaves to powder, I thought about those lost memories. My Da, he remembered my wife's name, and my children's too. I remember asking him about them, and he told me, and their names and faces ran from me as if they could no longer stay within me. The sound of Haida's singing soothed my sore heart. I don't know why she'd never sung on her own. Her voice was lovely, but she treasured the songs I gave her more than my grandmother treasured power. After I'd been underfoot a while, Haida quit being so quiet. "I knew that you had it in you," I told her after she scolded me, then paused, almost cringing away from me.
"Good. Now do it again."
"You,"
she exclaimed in exasperated tones, but she stopped cringing.
"Hugo, do as I told you."
So I pounded and ground and stirred at her direction. Some of the ingredients were new to me. When I asked about those, Haida's eyes grew round, and she ducked her head, glancing around herself as if asking for permission.
"That would be Underhill," she said. "This part of Underhill, anyway. It likes you, brings out favorites to share with you."
Some of those ingredients I learned centuries later. Saffron, paprika, black pepper, spices from all over the world. It was there I first tasted oranges, bananas, and potatoes. Some of the foods I ate there I never knowingly tasted again. I was crushing peppercorns with a mortar and pestle when she said to me,
"You must be careful with my lady."
"I won't hurt her," I promised, after sorting through several replies. Had Haida noticed how I looked at her sometimes? There was nothing that could come of it. I was a monster, and beyond that a simple village herbalist, and she a fairy princess. But a man could look and dream, couldn't he? She made a chiding sound.
"Of course you will. Everyone hurts everyone. It is part of a living. But I don't mean careful that way. She has a beast inside her."
"So do I," I told her. And as if that acknowledgement awakened it, the wolf inside me surfaced.
"Your heart beats with a wolf's rhythm,"
Haida said prosaically.
"But it is not a monster. Not the way my lady's is. Or your Da's is, for that matter."
"My Da's the same as I protested. "And Ariana is..." Words failed me for a moment. "Ariana is strong and true as a good oak tree." Haida set her wooden spoon to rest on a small table and turned to look at me.
"No,"
she said heavily.
"No, she is not. Once she was lovely and sweet and, it hurts me to confess, spoiled. Beloved daughter. But immortality is more curse than blessing. All things pass away. Love may live for a month or a year, but sooner or later it leaves."
I stopped working with the mortar. "No," I told her, because my heart knew better. "That is not true."
"Have you lived so long as I?"
she asked.